radio if we are live. It's November the 2nd, 2012, 2 minutes after the hour right here on Reese on the Radio. On blogtalkradio.com. You know I had to play that. Come on, it's the final countdown. How can I not play that? How can I not play that? Must be played. And I know it's Friday night. It's actually pretty cool out. Cold in some areas further north from here. Me, it's not too cold. This doesn't bother me at all. I like this weather. This is true fall weather. It smells crisp. Love it. It smells effervescent. For me, it's like breathing it's like breathing mountain air, even though I'm not by the mountains. But you know what I mean. It's just beautiful. It's just beautiful out there. It's beautiful, it's beautiful, it's beautiful. Especially when it's this chilly. You know, it's chilly in the house. You gotta wear a sweater. You know, maybe a flannel. Throw a blanket over you and the missus. Or whomever it is that you might be with. And you just enjoy being close to each other. You know, attracting more heat to yourselves. It's cuddle time, folks. This is when Valentine's Day should be, when it's like this. I know they put it in February. It's really, really cold. And that's why I say Valentine's Day in February. That's why it sucks. That's why it's such a downer to me. It's February. I lived in New York most of my life. Lived in real far northeast. And when it's that cold in February, you don't want to go out to dinner in some restaurant. Maybe have to deal with inclement weather. You don't want to have to deal with that. That's why right now it's perfect. If they could just put, you know, not that it'll happen, but if Valentine's Day was like now, right before winter, it was nice and brisk, you know, this would be perfect. No, but whatever. It's just not the case. Just can't get that damn lucky. And then, you know, it's unfortunate, but it happens. Anyway, plenty of news to get into today. We know the job numbers came in, and you know they're being spun like crazy. Everyone's talking about, they refuse to say, the regular press is refusing to say that this is bad. That the numbers shot up. You know, 7.9%. Barack Obama got this presidency 4 years ago at 7.6%. If you saw my Facebook page, you saw that graph of what it was like back in 2002, what it looks like now. After 10 years, what it looks like now comparatively between George W. Bush and Barack Obama, and Barack Obama was the better choice. You know, he was much better than Bush. That's all they were saying. So much better than Bush. You know, but I've got a question to ask. You know, if he's so much better than Bush, if Barack Hussein Obama is so much better than Bush, really, why does it look this bleak? Just why? Why does it look so awful? That's the only question I could ask. Why does it look so bad? Why are so many people suffering? I can't seem to understand it. Why? Why is the unemployment rate so bad? Why is food stamp numbers so astronomically high? And why is there dismay within our youth? Now, I don't know whether or not you folks heard this, you know, but I've got to play it. I have to play it because it's important. I'd like to talk a little bit about it. 9-year-old boy at a Michelle Obama rally in Atlanta, Georgia, where Negroes run deep, where they teach their children such partisanship and they fill them with so many lies. I've talked about this on the air, ladies and gentlemen. I've talked about this on the air, that There are black people teaching their black children that they don't have a chance in this country. That they're always going to be slaves in this country. And some ignorant, fool-ass Negro has his poor 9-year-old son, who doesn't know any better, spouting some of the most partisan, racially charged rhetoric I've heard in a long time. I think not since 1998, since that little Negro boy was talking about killing a George W. Bush back in April of 2008. You might remember that. See if I can find that audio on YouTube. JC, see if we can find that audio. The little black kid back in 2008 saying, I want to kill George W. Bush.
Yeah, you know what's odd? What's crazy about that little boy?
Yeah.
When Barack got, President Obama was elected, all the news media such as Entertainment Tonight, Inside Edition, Extra, they followed this kid all over, the same kid, all over Washington, because he wanted an interview with the president. And they kept praising him for being a mini journalist.
Did he ever interview with Obama?
Yeah, he did.
See, he got it.
If I'm not mistaken, he got it.
See if you can find that out. I'd like to know some info about that.
This very same kid. I couldn't believe it.
I believe you. See if you can find that. I think I know who you're talking about, too. I think it's the same kid. Well, this is some 9-year-old kid in Atlanta with his dad.
Oh.
And you'll hear his father laughing in the background. His father thinks this is cute. Folks, these are your Negroes within your midst. Now, I got people out there who call it self-hatred because I ostracize Negroes in the way that they behave, but I've got no choice. I've got no choice. I don't have to like them. I don't have to like anybody. But listen to this fool-ass man's little 9-year-old boy.
What's your name, young man? Brandon. You were just walking by. Is that your dad over there?
Yes, because he's daddy.
What were you telling your dad? That Obama needed to win? Why does he need to win?
Because if Mirani wins, we'll be going back to the crop field. We'll be clicking.
I'm doing a project for Obama too, which, again, and you know, here's the part that makes me laugh. The part that makes me laugh is this little kid is talking about Obama's going to change the world. What is it that you want him to do in another 4 years? Change the world like he did. What, he ain't changed the world enough, now you need him to change it some more? I mean, Obama's got to change the world like he did. That's what this kid wants him to say. That's what they want this kid to say. Obama's going to change the world. Come on. Where do you think that this little crumb snatcher got it from? It's real easy. I don't have to tell you. But you know where this little crumb snatcher got it from. No, this didn't come from his dad. Oh, no. See, his dad told him about the picking crops thing. But he got to change the world.
We're gonna spread freedom. Obama's gonna change it. Obama's gonna lead 'em. We're gonna change it and rearrange it. We're gonna change the world.
That's where she got it from. That's where he got it from. Obama's gonna change the world. That's exactly where you got it from. Obama's gonna change it. Obama's gonna lead us. Off-key little shit. I'm sorry. This is how awful it has gotten, ladies and gentlemen. They're teaching these poor little black kids, telling these poor little black kids that if Barack Obama loses the election, they're going to be picking crops. Well, listen, I got something to tell you, little crumb snatcher. Come Tuesday, maybe even Wednesday morning, I want you to get your construction boots on, get your gloves on, and get ready to start picking. Because isn't this kid going to look at his poor father and say, Daddy, Obama lost. Are we going to have to pick crops? What are you going to tell your kid then? What are you going to tell your kid then? You lied? You're going to tell him that you were a liar? Of course not. You're going to tell him, no, it's not going to happen now. You got to give it a little bit of time. But in a couple of years, we're probably going to be picking crops. So get ready. You better do what you got to do. You probably scare him right into getting his education. You might just do that. Nah, you won't be picking crops if you get your education. If the kid's smart enough, he'll say, but Daddy, you said if Obama loses, we're going to be picking crops. Well, I know I said that, but, you know, what I meant was, no, Daddy, what you meant was that we were going to be picking crops if Obama lost. Obama lost. We're going to be picking crops. I'm scared, Daddy. I can't sleep at night. Daddy, are you going to be picking crops? What about Mama? Mama going to pick crops too? This is what he set his dumbass kid up for. And I'm sorry. I got to call it like it is. This kid doesn't know any better. I shouldn't call him a dumbass. But I have no choice. I have a choice, but I choose not to. You've only made your kid stupid. That's all you did. You made your kid an absolute moron. And why? Because you're a racist. Because you're an effing racist. And I've got no freaking patience for racists. I don't give a damn what side you're on. I've got no place for racists. Now, I rip on everybody. Equal opportunity offender. I rag on the Mexicans. I rag on the gays. I rag on the Chinese. I rag on on all types of Latinos. On the Serbs. On the Russians. The Abdullah Madalams. I rip on all of them. White folks especially. Especially when they sound like complete and utter idiots. And Negroes, you are no better than them. I take a personal offense to Negroes who teach their children this garbage. Because they're already behind in the educational system and the structure system as it is. And there's nothing worse than one ignorant Negro teaching one of their soon-to-be ignorant Negroes something the ignorant Negro has learned from the streets of Harlem or Atlanta or Chicago. There is nothing worse than that. You can't have an elder idiot teaching the younger idiots. You can't do it. We're going to be picking crops. You bother to ask your daddy, how's that going to happen? Obama wasn't president when Bush was here. Were we picking crops then? How about Clinton? When Clinton was here, were we picking crops then? All of a sudden, Barack Obama becomes the president of the United States, and if he doesn't get reelected, we going to be picking crops, daddy? Why? Did you say it in jest? Were you kidding around with your son? We got to go out there. We got to make sure Obama stays president. Mess around. We're going to be picking crops. But you didn't even correct your son when he was on camera. You're laughing with him. And now your video is going to go viral. If people are going to see you in the street, that's okay. Niggas are going to think you're hilarious. Yeah, man, teach that nigga early, man. Teach that nigga early. Let them know these white fools, they're going to try to put us back in slavery, son. You let that nigga know early. That's what I'm going to tell you. You're going to get patted on the back. Nice little pounds on the back. Good job there, nigga. Good job there. Democrats love it. Look at him.
Telling his little Negro child why Barack Obama is going to keep him out of bondage.
I love it.
I love it. You know, Lyndon B. Johnson said they'd be voting for us for 100 years.
I like to thank that Negro.
What a great job.
That's right. Tell him we're going to put y'all back in chains like Joe Biden said. All right, make sure we flood their neighborhoods with drugs and violence. When the next election comes up, we're sure to let them know that this is the work of the Republicans. All right, Al Sharpton, hurry up. Get out there. Toss a crack rock, will you? That's exactly what I expect.
We've really got these Negroes hooked on our ideals.
That's what's happening, folks. If you don't think so, you're blind. Because could I be saying something so radical? Could I? This fool-ass Negro just told his 9-year-old child that if Barack Obama doesn't get reelected, we're going to be picking crops. And what I'm saying is far-fetched. That the libs aren't sitting up there applauding this Negro?
That's right. You educate them early. You let them know the Republicans want them back in chains. Hurry up now. Get to the polling booth.
Is it legal for us to have a 9-year-old boy knocking on doors to get Obama reelected?
Oh, what the hell? Who's going to report it? They'll think he's all cute. That's adorable. Look, even the youth are involved in the political process.
All right, fill their streets with more crack rock and gangs. Hurry up.
Who do we got that's due for parole who may have killed and murdered several people in the hood? Rayshon? Get him out of there! We've got an election coming up. We need to blame the Republicans for his mass killing spree.
That's exactly what it is that they're doing. You think I'm kidding? You really think I'm kidding? This is how they get down, ladies and gentlemen. It always is how they get down. That's why it's the final countdown. That's why it's the final freaking countdown. It all can come to a freaking halt if this guy is reelected.
Here's the gorillas and Dirty Harry. We'll be back. Stick around. It's Reset Radio.
Trying to
yeah,
pump
I
that.
Know exactly what you were doing.
It's November 2nd, 2012, 26 minutes after the hour. Anyway, so thank you, JC, because you found the clip. This was I think you're right. This kid did actually get an interview with the president, with Barack Obama. So here's the original audio. This was from August 13th. Well, somebody reposted it on August 13th, but this happened in 2008.
Yeah, but listen before we do that.
America, one of your presidents will die. I'm not bullshitting right now. I am serious. I am a kid who's going to blow my brains off if we don't get this guy off the office. I'm talking about George W. Bush. I'm not bullshitting with you, America, right now. I'm going to do some things. My thing is to get this guy off. But really, I'm going to kill him. I don't care how, but I'm not, but what my people is. When you hear George W. Bush is dead, I did it. But remember, I'm not doing this because of the fame, but I'm doing this because I am pissed off at him. That motherfucker, he don't deserve to breathe. That's why I'm going to take care what that should be taken off. But believe this right here. He will die. Who? Unknown. When? Unknown. By who? And how? I know that. Right in this brain. Which this brain is going to get. Have a big old.
Okay, I can't even play anymore. It's disgusting. It's just absolutely disgusting. JC, do you have the video of him when he met with the president? I think he was wearing like a white shirt, pair of slacks. JC, you there?
Yeah, no. Okay. He didn't get Barack. He got Biden.
He got an interview with Biden?
Yeah.
And this was covered by the press.
Yep. I'm almost certain.
Because I'm certain this kid looks like that black kid who they I remember Access Hollywood, one of those places.
Right. And I'm looking for the Inside Edition footage of it. I remember it being on Inside Edition.
That's what it was. Inside Edition.
And I said, that's the same damn kid that was on YouTube threatening the president, doing video after video.
And so Inside Edition does this thing with him for what? I mean, was it coverage of him making his statement?
It was him trying to get in on Inauguration Day.
Okay. But had they talked about the fact that he was on video talking about killing George W. Bush?
No, not at all.
Okay, so they ignored that part.
Right. Oh, I don't even think they knew it. Because if they had known it, there's no way in hell I can imagine them ever putting him on TV, period.
Because that just sounds insane.
It does sound insane.
Anyway, let me get White Mike in here because I know he can't stick around too long. White Mike.
Jesus, man. Listening to that kid, all I can think is it'd be a really good idea if some smart scientist put sterilizing agents in Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Is that a regular?
Do you know Flamin' Hot Cheetos is the go-to breakfast food in the hood?
I was gonna ask you whether or not that was a popular breakfast food in the hood.
Of course it is. There was some rap song a bunch of little Negroes did called Hot Cheetos and Takis about the snack
food right.
They like to eat. Dude, I'm
I
down,
that.
Son.
So you are down, Mike. You are down.
I know what's up. I'm like a Negro anthropologist.
In fact, if I'm not mistaken, the video that you're talking about had a guy with dreads in it.
Yeah, hot Cheetos and Takis. You can't even get, you only get Takis at like the most ghetto of convenience stores.
Was it called Hot Cheetos and what?
Hot Cheetos, and there's this snack food called Takis, T-A-K-I-S. It's some kind of tortilla-based or taco-flavored snack.
Right.
Really, really low end.
You got to send me a link to at least that commercial or the song.
Oh, it's a video, yeah. You just Google Hot Cheetos and Takis, man. It'll come right up.
It sounds... Hold on, I'm going to actually see if I can get it up. Oh, yeah, there it is. Hot Cheetos and Takis. All I did was put in Hot Cheetos in YouTube and Takis.
I'm telling you.
And Takis pop right up. And sure enough, here's the song. Hold on. Let's see if we can put this up. Oh, the video's in HD. And available on iTunes. Hold on, let's see. Wow, 3.7 million hits on YouTube. That is insane. Okay, well, it's got some advertising coming up. Let me see if I can actually... They're talking about this being a breakfast food?
Well, not in this video, but it's pretty well known that a lot of kids go to school with a bag full of Hot Cheetos for breakfast.
Clearly, I don't know much about the Cheetos brand.
Well, you are like the least black of the black people I know, man. No offense.
I try to stay away from them. I don't think I've ever had Cheetos as a kid.
Flaming Hot Cheetos, no less.
Yeah, that's...
And they're pulling them out of some school systems because they were giving kids bright red poops, and they thought they had ass cancer.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Except they're burning on both ends, huh?
Oh, no, Mama, I done got red craps. I'm dying, Mama. I'm dying. You ain't dying, Taquan.
So, wait. So they had bright red fecal matter. And
yeah.
Someone thought the kids had rectal cancer.
You got it.
It couldn't get any worse than that.
Takis by Barcel.
Okay, hold on. I've got this stupid commercial thing coming up. Hold on. All right, here we go. Here's the song, finally. Let's see what this sounds like. It's probably going to be horrible.
Sounds like something that should go on a rotation.
Okay, here we go.
Yo. I go by the name of Dane Jones. I'm with my crew. And we gonna show y'all what we be snacking on. You dig?
Okay.
Hot Cheetos and Takis. Hot Cheetos and Takis. I can't get enough of these Hot Cheetos and Takis. Got my fingers stained red and I cannot get them off. You can catch me in my crew.
It does sound like first of the month food.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, I know a woman who teaches special education, and, you know, I know it sounds racist, but a lot of her special education kids happen to be poor and black. And, yeah, they regularly go to school with bright red fingertips from their Hot Cheetos for breakfast.
It just sounds awful.
God damn, a bowl of grits takes 5 minutes to make, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
An instant take two.
Damn. Exactly. Oh.
With no self-respect in Southern, I will be caught dead with instant grits.
Yeah, I saw my cousin Vinny. I never had a grit.
That's just awful. All right, let me take a break when I come back. I got another piece of audio to play. We've got some audio from the Reverend Lowry. He's not really backing down, but he's kind of, I don't know. I guess he's not backing down from his statements about, all white people are going to hell. But he definitely does not, they don't even ask him about the I don't understand a nigga that wouldn't vote for a black president. But we've got some audio on him. We'll get back to that. We've also got some audio on the CIA's report on what happened in Benghazi. They finally released that today. And some other stuff as well. More to come when we get back. Stick around. It's Reese on the Radio.
And continue
all the way all
to
the way.
Rock the mic
all the way. You know,
yeah,
this right here,
y'all better get your act together.
This right here,
this right
here, ain't nothing but the END.
Yeah. So follow me into the sun and let your soul be free. The END, the END, the END, the END. This ain't nothing but the END. Follow me into the sun and let your soul be free. The END, the END, the END. But the END, follow me into the sun and let your soul be free. The END, the END, the END, the END, the END. This ain't nothing but the END, follow me into the sun and let your soul be free.
Wake up, I take out time to give thanks that I'm still existing, still insisting that my people open up their eyes up and wise up so we all can rise up way above the rim of the muck. But we can if we're stuck, and I don't give a fuck. And lost in a day, lost in a maze, trapped in a maze, men and hard as cement is the head. And that's why soon everything will be dead. And red is the color of the blood that's spilling, and hella amount is the totals of the killing now. I'm telling you that the sky is falling, but all you worrying about is sky falling. You're falling way out of control, and you ain't doing nothing but losing your soul.
And this ain't nothing but the END. Follow me into the sun and let your soul be free.
Time is coming to a close. I got no need for jewels, cars, and clothes. Need to slow my roll, but can't grab control. It's unpredictable when we will go. I don't really know, but it seems it's coming soon. The way that niggas acting, we headed for our doom. But we assume that we immune to death. While niggas dripping sweat, trying to hold their breath. But they slept while the time just crept. Now they trying to awake, but it ain't much left. Sometimes I think we blind with no hope or faith. My people can't wake up, we sleeping through the day. Think it's all great, but to me it really ain't. When it's time to face reality, we turn to a drink. Or some dank, then we can't think straight. Let's try to make a change before it get too late. Cause
this ain't nothing but the END. Follow me into the sun and let the soul be free. The END, the END, the END, the END, the END. This ain't nothing but the END. Follow me into the sun and let the soul be free. The END, the END, the END, the END.
Now every day I wake up, I be rolling down the street, pumping my beat, but they try to defeat my cause. But I'm a rebel, so I can't pause. But all these laws, it's how I try to keep, but shit, still get deep, how deep, deeper than a motherfucking grave, and it's about that time I be more than a slave, so,
it ain't nothing but the END, so follow me into the sun and let the sun.
I'm serious, leaving you curious. How did he do that? Who that master man with the master plan? He's thinking faster than the slower.
Minutes to the top of the hour right here on Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com. I'm trying to get this audio up. I don't know whether or not you guys have been following this whole thing happening in New York after the Hurricane Sandy. But this story, whoo, this story caught my eye.
It's not summertime that we would be having the flies and all kinds of diseases here, but it's very, very bad here. People are defecating in my building, you know, where I am on in the hallway, because they can't get upstairs to go to the bathrooms. Where are they going to go? They're looking all around for a place to go. There's nowhere for them to go in this area.
I wish you luck.
It's not summertime that we would be having the flies and all kinds of diseases here, but it's very, very bad here. People are defecating in my building, you know, where I am on in the hallway, because they can't get upstairs to go to the bathrooms. Where are they going to go? All around for a place to go. There's nowhere for them to go in this area.
I wish you luck, because I know once you register, supposedly, if everything goes well, within 7 days, 2 weeks, they need the money.
The mayor should have been here, and the governor should have been here, just like they were in Long Island, just like they were in everywhere else. We're a community here.
So people in Coney Island and, of course, in Staten Island are arguing with the city officials about people not showing up. These communities. Now, I talked about it yesterday, about the looting that was happening at Rent-A-Center and at the liquor stores. But again, I could joke all day about that kind of stuff. But the fact that the police has not been around there to do anything, and if there's been police, it's been scarce. But now it's gotten to the point where people are defecating in the hallways. People are defecating in the hallways of high-rise buildings. Now, I've got one thing to say about that, folks. There's only one thing that comes to mind when I hear that. This is different from what? Because I know there's nothing new there. These are the Coney Island projects. Defecating is a part of life there in the hallways. Those people don't give a damn about those hallways. Really, name one time where you didn't hear that the back hallways and the staircases and the elevators didn't smell like some form of excrement. Are you kidding me? This isn't news. There's nothing shocking here. This is how the hood lives. In filth, what are they going to do about it? Where's the drug dealer who's got no place to stay? Where does he defecate? In your hallway. Where does the crack rock seller urinate? When he has to go to the bathroom, he can't do it at the pizzeria. Customer only. Customer only. He does it in your hallways, on your elevators. Where does every pit bull owned by somebody who lives in a project who's got nothing to steal? He's got an attack dog in the hood protecting what? A PlayStation 3 and maybe some Cheetos and Takis. But what do you have a pit bull? Where does the pit bull go to take a dump if he doesn't make it down the 12 flights in a project building? In your elevator. It's nothing new. It's nothing new. Put an H on your chest and handle it. Now look, if there had been some sort of death and destruction, yeah, fine. But I've got no empathy for them. My real empathy is for the people in Staten Island. Working class people, all middle class, you guys. I mean, 500,000 people living on an island, all working class. Most of them own homes. You know, unless you live in, not New York, but I think it's like Brighton or something like that. Wherever the Wu-Tang Clan used to hang out. They've got tenement buildings over there. But most of the people who live over there, they've got homes. And their homes are completely destroyed, and they're being ignored. Anybody know why? Anybody take a wild guess? It's because the island of Staten Island, remotely, votes Republican. No Democrat ever wins the borough. Never. They primarily vote Republican. You think Bloomberg gives a goddamn about Staten Island? He didn't vote for him. So weed in the water, as far as he's concerned. in your face, he put out two huge generators to run the marathon, which he, of course, after protest, he didn't think he was going to get much protest behind this. Earlier today, whatever, we got to have this thing. It's an important event. We got to have it nonetheless. But then the news, they love. See, that's the thing. This is where the liberal media backfires on liberals. The liberal media loves disaster. When they find out that people are dying and can't eat and are struggling and begging for help, the media is drawn to that. We need victims. They love victimhood. So they ran out there. It got all that publicity. All these people were asking about it. CNN goes out there and Wolf Blitzer asks, hey, should we be having a marathon? These people look like they're really destitute out there. They asked the Manhattan Borough president out there, should we? He's reluctant to say it. Finally, he just says, no, I don't think we should be doing this. And you're going to have the police presence and people handing out water and towels and supplies while these people are drowning. And have it start right on their island while people are running around the city. And he was forced to change his mind. But it had the media not loved victimhood, had not liked that kind of human trauma. Oh, sure enough, people would have been running all over the city. That's why it was an 11th hour decision. Let's bring in the guys. Dennis the Mass Menace is in the house with us. What's up, Dennis?
Well, hello, Reese. You know, I don't want to sound cruel, but don't they get what they deserve?
Hey.
They've been voting Democrat all their life in New York City. They've been warned a natural disaster can strike. Don't depend on the government. Don't depend on the herd mentality. Look out for yourselves. And what happens? They were smug when it happened in New Orleans with Katrina. They said, we're New Yorkers. You dumb hillbillies, you rednecks, you trash down there. You know, this could never happen to us now that it has. And you know, I feel kind of torn. Where do you feel? And the other thing is, you're a New Yorker. I'm not.
Mm.
There's been rumblings for years to separate Staten Island from New York City to make it its own city.
You are
maybe
100%
hook up with
correct.
Jersey.
You are 100% correct. For years.
What do you think about that? Does that have attraction?
You know
and
what?
The other outrage is when you do want to help, the unions screw you.
Oh, well,
I don't know
we'll
if you heard about the Decatur Utilities left Alabama to help for storm recovery in New Jersey, and they never made it because they're now calling confusion over union paperwork. They were told they were going to have to join the IBEW to affiliate.
Yeah,
Did you hear the footage of the union thug heckling those guys and yelling at them, calling them scab and all this stuff?
Nope, I didn't hear that.
I did.
Yeah, there
I
was
did.
Some,
but it's disgraceful. This is a
some,
what the hell is this? Are we Americans
killing,
first, or are we for the union, by the union, and are the union?
Some goomba was yelling, you friggin' scabs, you taking money from my family, screw you, scab. Like, you know, hear these nice southerners go out of their way and leave their families to go help those people, and they basically spit in their faces.
Can you imagine, look at it this way, and I'm not comparing the two, but could you imagine if some of these scumbags had said that to the fire departments from other places across the country? Who had come
I'm glad
to
you said scumbags, not goomba. I take offense at the word goomba. I'm Sicilian.
No, but I'm just saying. Imagine these scumbags had said that to these people who were coming out.
No, I don't like Guido either. The Guidos live in Staten Island.
But you know what? You're right. Dennis, you're right about one thing. Back in, I'm almost certain this was back in the early 90s, maybe even the mid 90s. There was a big discussion about Staten Island seceding from New York City because they felt as though they weren't really considered a part of it. They believed that they were ignored when it came to public planning, especially when it came to public works. They felt like they were being ignored. And they wanted to have a vote in Staten Island on whether or not Staten Island should become a part of New Jersey. In a lot of ways, people feel as though they already are New Jerseyans.
Let me ask you this. In the wake of this, when this settles down, do you think the movement will start again. When they're going to say, screw you, Mike, we're joining Christie.
Right.
Or something like that. We want to be part of Jersey.
Well, it's
you
funny.
You think that'll spark again?
People in Staten Island, the fact that there was this rhetoric today that was heard all over television, the same meme was sort of being repeated over and over again. One woman was saying it over and over again on several networks. We feel like the forgotten city. We feel forgotten. We feel forgotten. And then on top of that, they kept praising Chris Christie. And it was like the second line. It was like, we feel forgotten by Bloomberg, and especially with all of the, you know, with all of the talk about the marathon still going on. They felt really, really neglected. And then within the second breath, it was positive comments about Chris Christie. So I've always known that people in Staten Island always feel as though, you know, people in Staten Island, I'll tell you this, we have this term, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with it, we have this term in New York called bridge and tunnel people. And when we talk about that, we normally talking about bridge and tunnel people being from New Jersey. But Staten Island, they've always felt as though they were in that whole mix of being bridge and tunnel people. People find out you're from Staten Island. I mean, and to talk about it in such an urban way, I'll put it in this perspective. Everybody knows the Wu-Tang Clan when they came out in the early 90s.
No, I never heard of them.
The Wu-Tang Clan, part of their popularity in the beginning was they felt as though they were the only borough in New York that wasn't represented within the hip-hop scope. Even guys in Long Island had more respect in the hip-hop genre than people in Staten Island did. And what Wu-Tang Clan wanted to do was to sort of represent the hip-hop culture in Staten Island, which is why they, you know, when they came out, that was their running theme. You know, they started changing the name. They gave it this little early urban name, you know, Shaolin Land and all that other stuff. So they started changing, like letting people know that Staten Island was just as hip as everyone else because they felt neglected. So everybody in Staten Island has always felt that way, no matter who it is, urban or suburban. They've always felt as though they've been neglected or dejected from the New York sort of state of mind. I think that's kind of what they feel now. And I agree with you. If there isn't backlash out after this all happens, where people say, we just can't be a part of this because we don't feel as though we're a part of New York. We're ignored. Long Island doesn't get – I mean, Long Island was really, really paid way more attention to than Staten Island was. And it was obvious. It was evident.
Well, let me ask you this. And New York is an anomaly because they have a city income tax besides the state and federal income tax. What benefits, if you live into Staten Island, do you get really from the city? What do you get for your buck?
You don't get much. You do not get much. I mean, look how long it took them to renew the Staten Island Ferry. That was probably one of the
You don't even have rapid transit because there's no rapid transit that goes across the bridge. It stops right there in the island, as far as I know.
One train that runs the length of the island, one metro train that runs it, and it doesn't even run like a subway. It runs like the Long Island Railroad or the Metro North. It's got like the stops that are like 6-7 miles apart. It doesn't even run like regular transit. The only way you could get in is Verrazano or the ferry. And those are considered your mass means of transit into the island of Manhattan.
And, well, they've had Republican mayors before, and Pataki was a Republican. Why is Staten Island – what's the historical basis for the island to be ignored?
There's a reason why. It's because it's a self-sufficient island. It's not like we're looking at a overpopulated sort of like – it's not like Coney Island District. It's not like Harlem. Their ghetto, if you will, is not as big as places like Bed-Stuy. Their ghetto is really, really small, and it's just off Prince George at the edge of the island where the ferry is, and it's a very small, you know, area in Staten Island that has sort of like this – and if you live in Staten Island – you're generally making a pretty good amount of money as far as, you know, income is concerned. To live on Staten Island, you've got to be solidified as a middle-class member of society.
How else would you be able to take the Girdles Bridge every day to work in Jersey?
And a lot of them do. And a lot of people from Jersey live in, you know, move to Staten Island. If you live in Staten Island, you end up moving to Jersey because the Goffles is right there. But there are not a lot of people – people who live in Staten Island, if you were to meet them or talk to them or communicate with them, they don't even seem like New Yorkers. They seem more like they are in Long Island or New Jersey because it's very suburban. They
so
don't
what's
have
the solution?
Appeal.
We've identified the problem. What's the solution as you see it?
I agree with you. They need to secede from New York City. Join New Jersey.
And with a Long Island.
Well, Long Island is, look, remember, Long Island in a lot of ways isn't considered the fifth borough or the sixth borough for that matter. Long Island is in and of itself, is its own, you know, place. People don't look at Long Island as New York City. They just look at it as Long Island.
Well, Long Island.
Yeah.
What's up, Edward? How are you?
Hey, Reese. How's it going? Hello?
I know you're closer to this than I am. You had to have seen this mess with the defecation in the hallway.
Yeah, like you said, that's a normal part of all the projects. I don't know what she's complaining about.
Yeah, now the news is covering it like it's, oh.
Like it's new.
The hallway.
You're telling me these people who've lost their power and they can't flush their toilet don't have the common sense to take a dump in a grocery bag and then maybe throw it out the window, for God's sake?
It's so interesting that you say that, because I heard that that's what they're doing in a lot of stores, that they're just putting the grocery bags over the toilet, and then, you know, but I'm sorry, just having to think that people have been reduced to that, I'm sorry, I'm scared.
I mean, it's better than pooping in the hallway, for God's sake.
I mean, I've never lived in a project, but I know when I did live in Brooklyn, our toilet would still operate if you took water, and let's say you put it in a bucket or a pot and you use it to just dump it in a bowl, it would flush. I don't know what they have in the projects, but
I go camping, and I don't poop right next to my tent, for God's sake.
Oh, right, and there was something I had to take issue with you about that, Reese.
What
was
that?
You talked about the pit bulls dumping, taking a dump in the hallways. Dogs know not to shit where they live, not to shit where they sleep. Unlike these project people.
Now you got to give the dog some kind of credit on that one. And me, and I can tell you, coming out of the projects in Hartford, Connecticut, I mean, I've lived in the actual multi-story brick project.
Edward is suggesting that the dog has got more sense than Negroes in the hood.
I'm not suggesting that. I'm saying it straight out.
That's a fact. I mean, it just sounds that way, but it's a fact. Dogs don't shit where they sleep.
even a cat will go shit in a litter box. You know what I'm saying? He'll crap in his own bed.
Or in that scratch pad, or that, you know, that little monkey bars that you buy for them.
Yeah, right? He'll go poop somewhere else. It's just crazy, man.
And when the litter box is way too done and loaded with shit, he'll crap right just outside the litter box.
Yeah.
Well, at least it's close.
How are these people hungry? I mean, they gave them, what, 3 days notice?
They eat shit.
When the storm was coming? Couldn't they go down and buy themselves some, I don't know, some hot Cheetos and Takis to get through?
No, here's the problem with that.
I've had my dog for about 4 or 5 years now, and he's pooped in the house only 2 times, and that was because he was sick and because he doesn't have thumbs to open a door.
But you know what?
Yeah, right.
You know, Mayor Ray Nagin in New Orleans had this same issue. He had 2-3 days to know that the storm was coming. All reports said that it was going to be, you know, going to be awful, and people didn't evacuate in enough time. The biggest problem with this thing in New York was that the flooding and the damage was severe, and even if people did take non-perishables and sort of did all that stuff and sort of stocked up, their houses became so flooded that they couldn't even salvage any of the stuff that they bought and stored. And a lot of those houses in Staten Island, which was even worse for them, was the fact that their houses were absolutely destroyed.
Look, man, I have a go bag. It's not complicated.
Those are folks that should have left.
Cans of stuff in a backpack. It's called.
Yeah, I mean, those are the people they should have left.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you really can't blame them.
Yeah, they after looking at all of this and seeing what it is, what the devastation is in Staten Island, I mean, those people should have left. But I'll tell you one thing. Those guys, those people.
Yeah, but what about Irene last year? Didn't they all think, as a New Yorker, well, you know, that's overblown media. We're New Yorkers. We're New Yorkers. We can do anything. And
right.
Who cares about Irene? You see, that was all a big blow about nothing. Like,
but what about
my New York accent?
The Bay Bridge area of Queens that lost 100 houses to the fire, those people didn't expect that. That's that was just devastating. And I'm sure
Reese, let me ask you this. Let me throw this out. What's going to be the effect on Tuesday?
Low voter turnout in New York.
Yeah.
It's going to be, if they don't get the lights back on before the weekend, if they don't
not
get
only
out,
that, I mean the region-wide, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York.
Controversy, recount, and attorneys.
That's just terrible. All those Democrats can't vote. I'm torn up.
Pennsylvania is still in play, according to
New York Times. Says it's now tilting Romney.
Yeah, New York Times, according to New York Times, that's tilting. The other states, I'm not too concerned about them. I know New Jersey.
And Christie's ordering gas rationing.
New Jersey's going to go Democrat unless, really, they start listening to Fox News and start really, really pinning this storm on Obama and he gets a shock to the system. But I don't think anything's relatively going to change. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think at all.
So you don't think that the New York City vote will be depressed enough so upstate, which trends Republican, might make it a lot closer or more interesting?
Only if Western New York seriously dominates the vote. Like, I'm talking Western New York from Buffalo, Rochester, all the way east to areas like Syracuse. If that really, really goes heavy Republican, there's a strong possibility that it could switch the New York vote. But it has to reach past Syracuse, even into Albany.
Well, how many people are blaming Barry? I didn't mean Hurricane Barry either.
I don't think any of them are. I know Western New York's not going to vote for him no matter what. But like
where
I said,
where the hell is Kanye?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, where's Kanye? He's too busy, you know, balls deep in that Armenian whore to worry about his homeboys in New York City.
Exactly.
He
showed up on Wall Street. Jay-Z and them are not showing up for the people in Coney Island, Brooklyn. That's pretty impressive. I think Kid Rock should come out and say, at the telethon on NBC, he should come out and say, Barack Obama doesn't care about white people.
Yeah, I mean, where the hell is Ghostface Killer in all this? That's what I want to know.
Hey, but you know what? Speaking of Kanye and toilets, they've got issues of their own because there's reports of that second half of that Kim Kardashian Ray J tape surfacing and coming out where she was used as a toilet.
Only in America can a woman become famous for getting peed on by a second-rate rapper.
Second-rate rapper? He's not even a second-rate rapper. He's a second-rate singer. And it's amazing that how much money one penis can generate.
Yeah, right?
All right. I'm going to the top of the hour. We'll be back. Stick around.
About to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it? You? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You weep for Santiago and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. The death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
More appropriate words could not be spoken considering the Benghazi attack that took place on the anniversary of September 11th this year. So the CIA has finally released a report today on Fox News. Again, if this appears to be confusing to some degree, I don't blame you. I got most of it. I understood it. I listened to it three times. I taped it, listened to it again, just to make sure that I figured out what it is that's going on here. But apparently the CIA is completely contradicting reports and documents that Fox News has obtained. But this is their official report, as reported by Fox News. Here's the deal, as they reported it today on, again, my favorite news show now. I barely don't even watch the other evening news. Brett Baer on Special Report. This is how it went down.
Nearly 8 weeks after the September 11th attack in Benghazi, the CIA is finally acknowledging its role, providing the most detailed timeline to date of its agents' participation in rescue efforts that night, an effort to rebut the account provided to Fox News by one of their own operators who helped. The CIA says it took 24 minutes from the start of the attack at 9:47 p.m. for former SEAL Tyrone Woods and five other CIA agents to leave the annex to provide help at the consulate less than a mile away. A second recon team left about 40 minutes after the attack began. Our source insists that all teams could have left sooner, but were told to stand down. The CIA now says the base chief was trying to arrange Libyan assistance. At 11:56 p.m., the CIA team returns from the consulate. They immediately come under attack with rocket-propelled grenades and small arms for the next hour. At 1:01 a.m., some assume the fight is over, according to the CIA version. Meanwhile, at 1:15 a.m., CIA reinforcements arrive on a 45-minute flight from Tripoli in a plane they've hastily chartered. That team, which includes former SEAL Glenn Doherty, doesn't leave the Benghazi airport until 4:30 a.m. They are held up by Libyan authorities. That team wanted to go to the hospital to retrieve Ambassador Stevens' body, but could not because the hospital, according to the CIA, was surrounded by the Ansar al-Sharia militia, an al-Qaeda-linked group behind the attack. U.S. intelligence informed senior leaders as early as 7 p.m. Eastern, less than 4 hours after the start of the attack, that Ansar al-Sharia carried out the attack. At 5:04 a.m., Doherty's team finally arrives at the CIA annex, about 7 hours after the attack on the consulate began. He and Woods take positions on the roof, and according to the CIA official version, Woods and Doherty focus their laser sights on groups of Libyan attackers, quote, as warnings not to fire. They do not, the CIA says, laser the mortar team. Woods and Doherty are killed by a mortar at 5:26 a.m., and the CIA evacuates the 30 survivors to the airport. But the plane they chartered from Tripoli isn't big enough and has to make two trips. 12 of the survivors must wait until 10 a.m. for the flight to return from Tripoli. ABC News reported last month the State Department denied a request by a security team in Tripoli to keep a DC-3 fast-moving passenger aircraft in-country to transport security personnel. That plane was instead sent to Iraq.
Brett, as you noted earlier, Fox News has learned the FBI is finally getting access to the sole suspect in custody, Ali Ani al-Harsi, who's being held in Tunisia. This comes a day after Senator Lindsey Graham inquired with Tunisian officials about whether the FBI could have access, and a day after Tunisian officials met at the State Department. Brett?
Right. So the question is, if a South Carolina senator who's obviously involved in defense issues can pressure the Tunisians, why couldn't the White House? Okay, Jennifer from the Pentagon, thank you.
Snide little comment from Brett Baer at the end. White House can't get to the guy in Tunisia, but Senator Lindsey Graham can, after sending one letter and a phone call. But, of course, the White House could not get to him, which pretty much begs one question, and then trust me, there are several, but it begs one serious question about all of this, is the fact that, you know, with the President of the United States constantly talking about, you know, how they got bin Laden and how they planned for this and, you know, how, you know, they're striking these forces and all of that, why it took so long and, you know, 7 hours, 5 hours, all this other stuff that's going on, that troubles me. The biggest question that I have is that the CIA is now reporting that the reason why they could not get to the hospital to retrieve Ambassador Stevens' body is because the hospital was surrounded by a terrorist group. And in 4 hours within the attack, they had information knowing that a terrorist group associated with Al-Qaeda had pretty much been responsible for this attack, which then begs the question, why were we talking about a video for a week? I mean, if anybody stuck their foot in it, the CIA definitely did. All there was conversation about a video. And we're still getting all of the information, which now appears to be, regardless of what anybody says, a flat-out lie by the White House and the State Department. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, totally. Those were the people who spent $70,000 on a commercial they sent out to the Muslim world. Gentlemen, your thoughts? Or do you have any questions based upon what the CIA is now saying?
You know, what the hell is going on with General Hamm?
In what regard?
Very dangerous precedent when a man is saying, screw this, I'm taking care of my men, and then he's fired. And then our commander-in-chief dares to say during Sandy, we leave no Americans behind. He just did that in Benghazi. Has this man no shame? Has he no sense of propriety?
Well, hell, he's still doing it in New York City. There's New Yorkers eating out of dumpsters, for God's sake. So he is ultimately full of crap.
Yeah, you know, the fact that the CIA...
Of course, we can have sing Kumbaya and have milk and cookies from the Red Cross.
That was pretty interesting. The fact that the CIA would now, 6 weeks later, tell what their version of what happened, which is we're supposed to take as the truth, saying that during this attack, you know, two instances in this report, according to the CIA, they knew this Al-Sawari, whatever the name of the group is, and I always forget the pronunciation of them, but the fact that they knew on two separate events in this report, it states that they couldn't get Ambassador Stevens because this group is surrounding the hospital, so they can't go in, and the fact that this group also states that they carried out the attack, and that is now official intel by the CIA. That means that they knew this, according to the report. This is what they knew hours into the attack. But yet, the State Department and the White House, they send out UN Ambassador Rice to say that it was sparked by a video, and they knew it wasn't. I mean, if there's no matter what anybody says, they're lying. And it's evident from the CIA report. I mean, I know the CIA is a lot different from the FBI. The FBI doesn't care who the administration is. They're going to tell you what the deal is no matter what. They'll throw anybody under the bus who did wrong. They're going to do it. CIA is a little different because in some cases the CIA has that sort of undertow of partisanship. But the CIA saying that their report reveals that the terrorist group they knew 4 hours into the attack, They knew when they tried to get the ambassador out of the hospital that this terrorist group was there and they were surrounding the hospital.
Well, that shows you that he has absolutely no respect amongst the intelligence community because he threw them under the bus. This was their screw you, Barry moment.
You think this is a screw you, Barry moment? You think that's the reason why they put out this report?
Absolutely. He doesn't have them in his pocket. You know, when he gave that nonsense and said, oh, you know, we had no idea about this and no intelligence and all this, that threw the CIA under the bus. And I don't think they like the guy.
Yeah, well, that was right, because Jay Carney kept using the word actionable intelligence. But, you know, for anybody to say there was no actionable intelligence, that this was a terrorist attack, that's completely mitigated in what it is that they say about Tyrone Woods. 27 minutes into the attack, he's told to stand down because they know that this is being carried out by terrorists.
Well, don't you think there's a possibility that these two ex-Navy SEALs were actually working for the CIA? I mean, that happens all the time. You know, people who are deep cover get, you know, civilian identities so they can get into these countries because you don't let active duty military or intelligence agents into a country like Libya. So they say, oh, well, you know, he's a contractor, he's a bodyguard, but it's totally possible these guys were spooks.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's completely plausible that they would put them in civilian roles so that they can get access and they can get actionable intelligence in this particular case.
And
of course, if something were to go down, they could fight back.
And Obama let them die. So career intelligence agents in the agency are leaking information that, had they been in Obama's pocket, would not have been leaked.
Why? You know, it's sad because, you know, I've been seeing reports today about this whole deal about how I think Jake Tapper and who's the reporter from CBS who's been covering this is a woman. She also covered the Fast and Furious scandal as well. She does a lot of foreign corresponding, but they both did reports on the Benghazi issue. Jake Tapper and this woman at CBS, and I apologize that her name is escaping me. But she did the report at CBS. CBS would not air it on the evening news, and they put it on their website. I mean, they pretty much scrapped it.
Yeah, there's reports coming out of there's a female reporter who left CNN, Laura Lyon or something. Her name is Amber Lyon.
Yes.
And Amber Lyon has basically thrown the establishment media under the bus and said that they are in the pockets of the administration and that the administration is paying them to keep stuff quiet or something like that.
Yeah, I think the story was they were paying them, they were paying CNN International on what stories they should and should not produce.
Yeah, she did a 2.5-hour podcast with Joe Rogan, where she laid it all out, and she said that she had stories squashed that were not favorable to the administration, and that they're in the pot, they're in the tank for this guy. And I don't get it. I mean, the media is just in love with this fellow, and I don't understand it.
Well, Reed, they told you with Clear Channel's problem.
Well, right, exactly. I mean, again, when I heard her story, of course, you know me, I didn't bat an eye. You know, as I said, the executives over at Clear Channel, they contacted us in Little Hartford, Connecticut, because we were about to go syndicated, and would contact that office and tell them, don't do any stories that bash Bill Clinton, when the guy is not even – it's 2004, for crying out loud. He's no longer in office, and I'm being told not to do any stories that put a Bill Clinton in a horrible light and tell me to knock it off. Again,
it also happened. It happened with the Dixie Chicks too, though. I mean, look at them. You know, Clear Channel.
I also
have
a friend who moved to Connecticut and won a group Pulitzer for his work. And earlier, he went to see his family in Cuba, and because he's a Cuban American, I asked him, "What's with the media down there?" He said, "Well, they're in Fidel's pocket, and why is that?" He said, "They're not going to report and really what's going on, because they're treated like kings, like royalty, and they're not going to say anything critical of the regime because they'd lose all the escorted, the chauffeured limousines, et cetera, which they don't report on.
Mm-hmm. Well, Limbaugh said
and they've all been bought and sold. And
Limbaugh
in D.C., because you have the parties going through, they don't want to lose their social standing and stop being invited to the cocktail hours, the cocktail parties. And this is from both parties.
But wait a minute. Yeah,
I want the media to be antagonistic to whoever's in office. I don't care what party. I mean, that's their job.
But they don't care anymore because they're
in
their social circle. Jeffrey Kuhner was mentioning this the other day. He said they're in their social circle, liberals and conservatives, in D.C., mind you now, and they all love to be invited to the dinner parties, and they're not going to stir up the pot. And that goes for the political generals.
That's why you have to listen to social media and the Internet. They give you the real deal, not like these, you know, mainstream media.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody in the social media that goes to a dinner party in D.C., do you?
No.
Nope.
No. I actually don't.
Bruce, when's
the
last time you've been to a dinner party in D.C.?
When he was the waiter.
Yeah, I don't really think Alex Jones gets too many invites to dinner parties. You know what I mean?
No, exactly. And it's funny because I saw that CNN reporter's piece on Alex Jones. And, you know, now that the fact that this woman has the evidence to prove that, you know, that literally this information is being suppressed. And CNN is in the pocket. But, you know, you guys mentioned this whole thing about wanting to be a part of the dinner parties and being part of the social circles and having those connections because it's being a part of some sort of elite establishment. Fine. Understood. I get that because, you know, the better you have that connection, the more possibility that you become this brand, so to speak, you know, at the risk of ratings. You know, Wolf Blitzer is still Wolf Blitzer, even though no one watches his show. You know what I mean? It's like that.
Well, I think Chris Matthews would blow Barack Obama given half a chance.
I don't know how many times I've heard him suggest very, very gay tendencies when it came to Barack Obama.
I
think he was.
Are you trying to tell us that tingle he had in his leg was really his third leg?
Yeah, right.
Well, I don't know if you guys remember that time he was talking about Bill Clinton speaking at the Democratic National Convention just this summer, where Chris Matthews, at the end of playing some audio or some video of Bill Clinton's speech, I think he says, Chris Matthews afterwards said, if I was Barack Obama, I'd marry that guy. He says about Bill Clinton. He said that live on the air. I'm like, what? I mean, I can understand being in a tank for a guy, but it's just going way overboard with Chris Matthews. You know, and again, like, you know, I played the audio not too long ago. Chris Matthews says that stupid freaking line about everybody knows it's the video. You know, I mean, I'm sure you guys remember when I played that. He says, you know, he tells the kid when he was saying, you know, Mitt Romney didn't lie about Benghazi. And he says, what did he lie about Benghazi? And he says, you know, saying that it had something to do with the video. And he says, everybody knows it had something. It has everything to do with the video. Here's the audio.
Hey, Romney. One more Romney.
He doesn't cover up scandals in the Middle East.
What was the scandal that was covered
Benghazi.
Up?
Benghazi.
What was the scandal?
Well, I mean.
Get to it. Nail it. What was the scandal?
He said there was a video. It's not about the video.
Yeah, what's about the video? Read the newspaper. Thank you. Everybody knows it's about the video. It's all about the video. Thank you very much. We'll be right back with more Hardball.
Damn. Everybody knows it's about the video. I'm still baffled by that. Really? Everybody knows? I think you're the only one who knows it's about the video, Chris. The only person.
Hey, Reese?
Yeah.
I just want to jump in real quick and get you guys' opinion on this. I was doing a little research on the whole Benghazi thing, and I noticed that Clinton, at one point, she said that they had no actionable intelligence due to the Facebook,
yes.
Because of things posted on Facebook. So if you guys heard the soldier or former soldier named Brandon Raub, this guy was arrested because of things that he put on Facebook which were anti-government. So why is what he posts on Facebook actionable to throw him in jail, or rather, he was not in jail. He was in a mental institution. But things that are posted on Facebook about this Benghazi attack is not something actionable.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was just like what she said when she was so pissed off about when it was found out that this terrorist group had posted on Facebook that they carried out the attack. And she says, you know, posting something on Facebook isn't evidence of anything. But
yeah,
you know,
but they've got this former soldier, you know, they threw him in a mental institution because of what he posted on Facebook. So it's okay for an American citizen who has constitutional rights to be thrown in jail because of what he says on Facebook, but not attack or, you know, make some type of plan because these guys are planning something on the anniversary of the September 11th attacks?
Right. Absolutely nothing to see there. Which, again, is another classic case of this administration. It's disgusting, but it's true. It's just another classic case of this administration, just doing what it is that it does best. And that's, to me, it's just flat-out lie. I think that's who it is that they are. It's just flat-out liars. And, you know, but, you know, what are we going to do about it other than vote on Tuesday? And hopefully, you know, that's where the comeuppance sort of happens. If we're lucky enough, the people to really, really recognize what the truth is and what's really, really happening here. But, you know, we'll see how that happens. We'll see how that happens. Anyway, we'll take a break, play some Asher Roth. And when we get back, I've got some more audio. I've got to talk about this why am I forgetting his name? Reverend Lowry, who gave the benediction at the inauguration of Barack Obama. I've got some audio from him when we come back and some other news, of course, that's going on when we get back. Stick around. It's Reese on the Radio.
$1,500 another. Yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, this one's for the people. All the bees that are bleeding and sleeping and eat shit, breathe. I thought we all equal. Ain't a man on the God's green bee underneath any other. I don't wanna play preacher, but I swear they turn an ear when we talk about peace and love. Sometimes might need a hug. Yeah, we all wanna come on up above, but this ain't about Jesus. No way, no Abe, no Ike, Moses or Muhammad. Yeah, it's all about believing. Full steam ahead because you know the worst times are behind me. I don't wanna sound cheesy, but it's just to really mean it. Yeah, I'm telling, I can feel it. It's the reason I don't sleep. I'll be way too geek tonight. This one's for all of y'all. I'm the same as all of y'all. My shit, I work real hard enough for every little bit that I get, but this is all I need. So sing this song with me. It goes like, so sound like this. Everybody start clapping hands. It's like.
Go. about fame and fortune. It's about believing and believing in yourself and understanding that this life is life. It's liberty and the pursuit of happiness. And happiness isn't about getting what you want all the time. It's about loving what you have. So get ready. It's a new day.
Asher Roth on Recent Radio, right here on blogtalkradio.com, 31 minutes after the hour on this November 2nd, 2012. I know that song is relatively old, but, you know, I won't tell you the story about how I was hip to Asher Roth. But let's just say it was late night at a prison. So anyway, it was late Sunday night, actually. There's a guy in New York. We've talked about him on the air. He's played that song anyway. Okay, so New York City Marathon has been canceled. That is finally a wrap. Yesterday we talked about Reverend Lowry, who gave the benediction at Obama's inauguration. He gave the benediction speech at the inauguration back in January 20th, to be exact, 2009. And he said that he didn't understand how any nigger couldn't vote for the black guy, and said that all white people were going to hell. Well, he said that's how he felt in the past. He's since, you know, stepped back from that. He backpedaled on it when he got older, but now he's returning to that because he's saying that there's so much division and so much hatred, which sounded like, of course, he was pointing that at the Romney administration. And of course, giving, you know, no responsibility to Obama. Well, he was asked about it today, and Brett Baer covered it. The story pretty much went like this.
Reverend Joseph Lowry, who gave the benediction at President Obama's inauguration, said he believes all white people are going to hell. Today, he did not apologize. He said his comments were basically a joke, and things are being blown out of proportion due to his connection to President Obama so close to this election.
I told a story that I've told 100 times, particularly in interracial audiences, to lighten it up. We can get along. There's not that much difference in spite of our complexion.
There's not that much difference in spite of our complexion. Now, I got to ask, what the hell does that mean? Just, I've never ever heard anyone say it quite like that. What does that mean?
That much difference in spite of our complexion. Can get along. There's not that much difference in spite of our complexion. We can get along. There's not that much difference in spite of our complexion.
There's not that much difference in spite of our complexion. Now, I don't know whether or not I'm reading too much into this, folks, but I have to ask. JC, what did you hear when you hear that?
It sounded like somebody smarting that Negro up. It sounded like somebody took him in the back.
No. What does that term mean?
What does that
There's
mean?
Not much difference,
much difference
between us.
Said,
there's not
complexion.
Much difference between people in spite of our complexion. I mean,
he's still showing to a degree a separatist attitude. Like, to me, it sounds like he's saying that there's not much difference between blacks and white, in spite of our complexion. I take that to mean except we're still better superior. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I see a negative connotation. I hear a negative connotation in spite of our complexion. I'm not hearing what I said. Our complexions might be different, but there's not much difference between us. You know, my response to that would have been, you know, we're only different in skin complexions. We have plenty of similarities. He's
right.
In spite of, I get a completely different point of view.
But, you know, it sounded like somebody stopped him and said, listen, but listen, boss, you can't be going out there saying things like that to white folk while during the election time, you know? You can't be going out there saying that because you just might cause Obama a vote or two.
Yeah. Hey, Edward, as a black man, what am I missing here? Do you hear something in that? Am I wrong? Am I stretching here?
No, you know what? This old guy is just—I don't know where they dug his ass up from. I mean, when he gave his benediction, I mean, he's only concerned with rhyming and sounding cool. When the
right.
yellow will be mellow, when brown can stick around, it makes nothing this man said
that
makes any goddamn sense.
You know,
sense.
That's so funny that you say that, Edward, because that's the only reason why I remember him, because he did that during the benediction. He did a whole bunch of Dr. Seussian sort of things during that benediction. And people thought that was funny.
Exactly.
So, but you don't see anything, you don't see any connotation in that whole in spite of our color?
Or the backhand slap.
I do in a certain respect, but also think this guy is probably senile. And he's coming out of an age where, you know, you only listen to him because of his age. You know, you don't really respect or listen to anything that he really has to say.
Yeah, because so you're throwing it into the fact that he's 91.
And like I was saying yesterday, he comes from a time when a time of torment, and he's never ever going to forget that. That'll always resonate in the back of his mind,
right?
Despite his mindset or not, until he dies.
Right, his bitterness.
He'll always have that negative, that negative. He'll keep that negative vibe about it.
He's come from a time where being a black racist was really, really cool and really, really acceptable. And I'm not saying it's not to a certain extent these days, but there are blacks who don't really, you know, I don't really get along with this, you know,
well,
relatively
right.
fellow and all that crap that he's spouting.
Right. The
Reese, would this
life.
Be a time to segue into Jigaboo time?
I think it's a perfect
I definitely
time.
Will. Hold on.
Hey,
but
hey,
his
Reese, I got
the prime
it.
Of his life, Edward, what I see here is the prime of Reverend Lowry's life. The prime of his life was during the Civil Rights Movement. And think about what transpired after the Civil Rights Movement of the mid-60s into the late 60s. When this guy got into the 70s, the late 60s, early 70s, it was the Black Power Movement. So with that being accomplished, his racism, if you will, was really, really reinforced with that Black Power Movement. And he never let it go.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and his good friend is shot and killed by, you know, this white man, you know, in Memphis, Tennessee. You know, some people never ever let stuff like that go. I think he was evident when he said that in spite of, there's not much difference between us in spite of our skin color. And it's sort of like, you know, you have to see the video because he's sitting down, he looks haggard as hell. But he's just so angry. I know he's angry. He's bitter. Oh, what's the big deal? I was just telling you white folks how it is. What's
well, how I remember.
Yeah.
Now, can
well,
you
sorry,
imagine
how,
what the... If
I'm
this
saying
was Reverend,
how I remember.
If this was a white... If this was a white Reverend, can you imagine what people would be saying?
The backlash would be immeasurable. It would be insanity. But I'd love it
especially,
anyway.
Especially,
I would love it anyway.
Especially if he had given the benediction for Bush's inauguration. Oh, my God. Oh, could you, that's a hard one. That's a hard one to swallow. There ain't no way in hell.
I would love it nonetheless. Hey, Dennis,
well,
you got
West
the good
would be all
time?
Over it.
Yeah, I have something out of Minneapolis.
Okay, hold
hey,
on.
Reese,
I've got to wait for it.
Hey, Reese.
Hold on. Edward, go ahead.
No, I was going to say I have one after Dennis. I've got a new story,
too. You do?
Too.
Oh, man, yeah. Hey, look, man, we can all get in. Yeah, everybody can be a part of Jigaboo time.
Swing your sign across his mind. It's Jigaboo time. It's Jigaboo time. It's Jigaboo time. When you're running out of lyrics, it's Jigaboo time. It's Jigaboo time.
The money.
It's Jigaboo time.
What?
It's Jigaboo time.
What?
It's
What do you got for Jigaboo time?
From Minneapolis, Dateline WCCO, CBS. Police officers in Minneapolis and St. Paul are on high alert this week after an alleged death threat from a gang. Reportedly stems from an incident 9 days ago when St. Paul police shot and killed a drug suspect who rammed their squad cars. Minneapolis police had asked St. Paul police to pull over the car driven by 41-year-old Victor Gaddy. He was an alleged gang member with a lengthy police record. And they're saying they can't dismiss the threats and the whole thing, but I'm looking at the video and not a mention of his race. Now I had to look up in Google Victor Gaddy and look at the images. And what should you know? I see a mugshot. Guess his racial background.
Please say
Chinese.
I believe he wanted the brothers.
And what's his last name?
Gaddy. G-A-D-D-Y. Why can't they just show his picture? Of course, it's Minneapolis, ultra-liberal Minnesota. But here's a guy that was shot and killed. He has a lengthy police record. Alleged gang member, it says alleged, 41 years old. And the entire police department of Minneapolis and St. Paul are under a death threat from his gangbangers.
Yeah, that's the interesting part. He's an alleged gangbanger. They have published reports that the gang is making threats against the police department from the local gang, but yet they have to say he's an alleged gangbanger. And
yeah, they said
41,
the gang members talked about coming to town to retaliate and taking out a police officer. And now they're on high alert. But nobody can show a picture of him on the video feed in CBS, in the WCCO. Now, geez, I wonder if he was Swedish or Norwegian, maybe they'd have his picture and maybe with the flag of the Scandinavian country behind him so you wouldn't miss the point.
If he was part of a Russian gang, they probably would have taken pictures of his cohorts as well. They would have given you an entire dossier on his gang.
Yeah, Russian gangs are very proliferate. They have a hell of a lot of them in the Minneapolis area. Let's put it that way.
Go ahead, Edward. What do you got for Jigaboo time?
I've got something out of the beautiful city of Memphis.
Ooh.
Now, this is about a year old, so you may have heard of this already. This young man, he's 48 years old. His name is Joseph Hayes, a.k.a. Helmet Extraordinaire. His two kids were invited to a children's birthday party. So, of course, being an extraordinary example of black fatherhood, he brought his two kids late to the party, and all the cake and ice cream was already eaten. So, if you're a parent, you bring a kid to your birthday party. If all the ice cream and cake is gone, what do you do? Do you apologize for showing up late and hand the kid a present? Do you offer to clean up all the cake, ice cream, and other stuff from the party for showing up late? Or do you yell at the host, y'all gonna save my kids no damn ice cream and cake?
Please tell me he shot the place up.
He showed up and said, y'all didn't save my kid no ice cream, no damn ice cream and cake. Went back to his house, retrieved a gun, and then proceeded to threaten the host of the party.
Oh, boy.
Oh, damn.
Now, this father year ended up being charged with aggravated assault, and he's got a $30,000 bond.
I got to get a follow-up to this story. I got to see what happened. You know this. You know what this reminds me of? JC, you'll remember this story vividly. One day I had my son Caleb on the air with me at WRKO. Dennis, you might even remember this as well. We were talking about a couple of stories. It was like wintertime, and apparently a six-year-old kid was walking from the local store in Philadelphia. A 16-year-old kid had a birthday party across the street. The kids at the 16-year-old's birthday party went outside, and they had a snowball fight. An errant snowball went in the direction of the 6-year-old kid, not associated with the party, walking across the street. An errant snowball ended up hitting the 6-year-old kid, like on his arm or his shoulder, whatever it is. So the kid comes in and tells his father that he got hit with this snowball. Somebody threw a snowball at him.
Right.
The father comes out of the house with the .357 Magnum, walks up to the birthday boy, 16 years old, and shoots him in the face.
I do remember that story.
And then he fled the scene. I think they caught him a couple of states away. But shot the 16-year-old in the face for an errant snowball that hit his 6-year-old. 6-year-old wasn't injured, just got hit with a snowball. I mean, that nothing gets, to me, gets crazier than that story. Well, I'll admit, the ice cream and cake story, the only reason why it doesn't beat that story is because no one was shot. But for crying out loud, she went all the way home to get a gun over some ice cream and cake. Doesn't get stupider.
I'm still trying to find out if these guys are going to be invited back to the next year's birthday party.
Of course he is. He will be back. He will be back. Are you kidding me? Of course he's back. Oh, man. Okay, so you guys, I'm sure, are very, very interested in the election. But Monday is going to be nothing but election coverage. I'm surprised that any news is going to happen on Monday. So unless something happens over the weekend, some scandal breaks out or anything like that, what are you guys seeing in your, I guess, remote neighborhoods? JC, is there any political rumblings going on where you are in the Hartford area?
No. I mean, right now we're just being bombarded with Chris Murphy and Linda McMahon ads. However, I'm seeing something I've never seen before in these political ads, and I'm sure you've probably seen them as well, Edwin. Linda McMahon has put out ads for her and Barack Obama.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, I did hear a radio spot. Yeah.
What?
Yes.
Whoa.
She's aligning some of her beliefs with Barack Obama's beliefs. The specific ad I heard was what she did was she got this small business owner, her name was Andrea, and she got the woman to speak on a radio ad saying, you know, I'm supporting Linda McMahon, I'm also supporting Barack Obama because their beliefs align in such and such and such a way.
But wait a minute now, hold on. I thought Linda McMahon was running as a Republican. Is now she running
she
as a
is.
She sure is.
Now, look, I'll admit, she had a lot of problems with Blumenthal when she ran against him 4 years ago. She had a lot of issues with him. What hurt her against, Blumenthal, right? Richard Blumenthal.
Yeah.
She had problems with him. What hurt her the most was the fact that most of the mainstream media kept ripping her apart about her affiliations with the WWA and what they deemed as her exploiting women.
Yep.
So now you're telling me that Linda McMahon has decided, okay, because Connecticut votes nationally liberal and locally conservative,
I'm going to align herself
with a national election. This is going to kill her during re-election time.
I think now she's really concerned about this upcoming election, and the strategy could be changed, you know, when her next election comes up, which would, if she wins, would be 6 years from now, and nobody's going to remember about, you know, at that point.
Would you say it'd be 6 years from now?
Yeah, because don't senators have a 6-year term? Yeah.
Right, because that's how they end up within the midterm election.
Yeah.
So, what about the guy that she's running against? Hello.
I haven't heard any radio ads from him. Well, I mostly listen to, you know, I don't really watch TV that much. I haven't heard anything from him, to be honest.
Does she look like she's at least having a prominent race there? Does she look like she's up in the polls?
Let me tell you something. This is totally anecdotal.
They were neck and neck for a bit.
you know, I haven't been watching the state polls this much, but I don't know if JC has noticed this also. Back in 2008, you know, just driving around the major highways, you saw lots of yard signs for Barack Obama. You know, maybe a 50-50, you know, percentage, you know, Barack Obama and McCain. But now I have not seen – I drove like an hour on one of our major highways out here, and I cannot find a Barack Obama sign. You see all types of Romney signs, Lizzie McMahon signs, people making handmade signs saying OMG, which means Obama must go.
So wait a minute, now, when you say major highways, were you talking 91 or are you talking
91, 95, yeah.
4?
Well, not, I'm mostly on I should specifically say local highways, like the 67.
Okay.
Especially 67, yeah.
Right, 67. So you're talking about, okay, so on 67, which is, I mean, that's an affluent area, though, right?
Bits and parts are. You know, it's a very long highway, so you drive through, you know, very affluent areas and then poor areas. You know, it goes back and forth. But I cannot find Obama signs, you know, for the life of me.
Now, I know Obama's going to win big in areas like Hartford because there are a lot of, you know, West Hartford probably will be considered a little more liberal. I know East Hartford is extremely liberal. Manchester, there'll be some dips and dabs there as far as there's a lot more conservatives in Manchester than people give them credit for. But what's the next town east of Manchester on 84? The next town over, JC?
Manchester, you got Manchester, Vernon, Bolton.
Vernon
yeah.
is going – Vernon, forget about it, that's going straight to Obama.
No, I doubt it.
You don't think so?
No.
Really?
No. I really don't think it'll go to Obama, no. I mean, right now, even our Democrats in the state, they're pretty fed up and pissed off at Governor Malloy, and he's a Democrat.
Right. Well, yeah. If you own a home in Connecticut, you've got to be pissed off at Malloy.
Oh, they hate this man. I mean, they hate this man with a passion.
This man goes after property tax like a dog with a bone. In Connecticut, he is the worst. I don't know how you go from what was her name? Why am I forgetting her name?
Jody Rowe.
Roland.
Jody Rowe.
Yeah, Jody Rowe. I don't know how you go from Roland to Rowe to Malloy because you want to talk about a complete. I mean, Jody Rowe's approval rating by the time she was leaving office was somewhere in the mid 50s. And I remember in 2004 when she took over for Roland, when he got sent up the river, she had a 68 approval rating by the end of the year, by Christmas.
Yeah. I thought the state pretty much liked Jody Rowe.
They loved her. Because I think what they really loved about her was that she wasn't really – I mean, aside from the fact that she wasn't extremely partisan, like she really didn't wear her politics on her sleeves, but that woman was able to separate herself – from Roland with his scandal.
She had to.
Well, she was brilliant at it. And her.
I just gave you the ad there for independent thinker.
Yeah, it's stunning that she that they would go with Malloy after that. Dennis, what about you? What's Pocahontas and Scott Brown look like?
Uh huh. I got a great story. Let me ask you this first: if you were to see a sign on the side of a building, it said, re-elect Scott Brown, U.S. Senate, Lieutenant Colonel, even though he's a colonel now, full bird, Lieutenant Colonel, U.S. Army, not an Indian, freedom is not free, Section 60, Arlington National Cemetery, one nation under God. Would you have an objection?
Not really.
What you're going to say. Yeah. Well, that puts you apart from the Haverhill Civil Rights Commission.
So because he used the term not an Indian?
You got it.
Of course. It's Massachusetts.
The Greater Haverhill Civil Rights Commission. I'm doing my Ted Turner or whatever the hell the guy, Ted Baxter imitation, sorry.
Yeah.
Senior moment. Demanded a campaign sign supporting U.S. Senator Scott Brown and, quote, not an Indian, close quote, be removed immediately. The sign re-elects, and I just told you what it said, owned by such local Native Americans have complained about the sign, saying they are insulted. The sign refers to an issue in the U.S. Senate race in which Republican Brown accused Democrat Warren of using her Native American heritage to receive preferential treatment when applying for a position at Harvard Law School.
Unconfirmed Native American frickin' heritage, still unsubstantiated Native American heritage, highly suspect Native American heritage.
Oh, it gets better. A statement released yesterday by the Civil Rights Commission reads in part, "The sign implies ethnic inferiority, that Native Americans should not be eligible for elected office, and that Native Americans cannot serve in the United States Armed Forces because they are not patriotic," close quote. The statement was released by Rabbi Ira Corono of Temple Emmanuel, who heads the commission. The group consists of other local clergy members and civic leaders. It didn't have quotations around civic leaders. I wonder why.
Hey, Dennis.
Trying to be ironic.
Hey, Dennis.
Exactly.
So from what you're saying is that if a candidate puts out a totally factual statement saying that they're not an Indian, that's cause for someone to be, you know, penalized. But if someone lies, Liawatha, talking about their past ancestry, that's not something that's actionable.
What I'm going to do, I posted this in Quilture, and Reese, you ought to click on it so you can see the photos of the commission. And you have a guy that's older than me. I don't know if he's white or black or an Obama. And he's got this afro, and he's so angry. And then you got this woman reverend with her arms crossed, and she looks like she's ready to kill. And you got this rabbi who's older than I am with a pot belly hanging over his gut. And they all look like they're ready to kill. They look like the Odd Squad from the 1960s.
Yeah, but you know what? You make a valid point. Here's something. Edward, to your
and the Brown
the
campaign,
about,
by the way, asked for the sign to be removed.
Of course they did. But Edward makes a valid point here.
Yeah, I know.
Throw
he
in
did.
The Richard Blumenthal thing. It's quite clear that in New England, that somebody like Elizabeth Warren, whose Indian heritage is suspect, The polls still show that she's neck and neck with Scott Brown. Well, remember, Richard Blumenthal, this guy talked about how he came back from Vietnam and found out he had never, ever gone, and they still beat Linda McMahon. And,
what
and
do you
then,
want from me? I mean, you got liars all over the place, and people are in denial.
You got to understand, Blumenthal could have took a crap in the Pope's hat, and Connecticut would have still voted him in.
Let me ask you this. I mean, because you're a Connecticut voter, does Lyndon McMahon's husband hurt her more than help her?
Oh,
I mean, when I first heard about
her,
and I said, is she out of her mind? I mean, who the hell is she? It's Megabucks wants to win a Senate seat. That was 2 years ago.
JC is the perfect person to answer that question.
that's my area of expertise. I don't think it's so much her husband. I think it's pretty much what is now being actually celebrated by the organization. It's called the Attitude Era. And that's when WWE and its product was rated M for mature. And they really did do a lot of demeaning with women. I mean, hell, they had 80-year-old flopper puppies out on pay-per-view. I mean, there was kids in the audience.
Well, there's some more story about the sign, by the way. Brown campaign said one of his representatives asked the guy to remove the sign. He refused. And he's been adamant that the sign's going to remain exactly where it is. He doesn't believe it's offensive. Quote, "There's nothing that is derogatory to anyone other than Elizabeth Warren," close
That's
quote.
Right.
He said in a story in the Haverhill Gazette on 25 October, quote, "It's just saying that he's," meaning Brown, "not Native American. I've had people knock on my door and say, thank you for saying that," close quote. The rabbi said he contacted, well, the guy's name is Caruso, Tuesday night about the sign. Caruso simply thanked him for calling and hung up the phone. And the rabbi said the sign puts a black eye in the city. "The city of Haverhill has always prided itself in being a diverse community which respects the diversity of its population. It's unfortunate that such a sign should appear in our city." You know, And then the mayor, a Democrat, by the way, citing freedom of speech, said the police said they do not have the authority to order the sign removed. What the hell do we even have country that they would even consider having to ask the police or even think to the police where or not they had it removed or to have the authority? The Civil Rights Commission, however, said the sign does not fall under the criteria of freedom of speech. Well, screw them and the horse they came on without a saddle. Because Indians don't use saddles.
It's time to
That's
go,
That's what
guys.
I learned
Thank
in the movies.
I appreciate it, guys. We'll do this again on Monday. Everybody have a great weekend. It's the final countdown. Get ready. It's almost here. God,
he better lose.
We'll see you Monday.